WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Now the kids are back inside school buildings in most places. Officials have to make sure they don't spread the coronavirus. A Culpeper County couple sues an electric company for trying to install internet cable lines along their property without their consent. And we have a preview of Thursday night's virtual debate between the two major party governor candidates and an interview with the third party candidate, not invited. This is the WMRA Daily for Thursday, September 16th. Now that most students in our area are back in classrooms, schools are having to mitigate the spread of COVID-19 within their buildings. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
On a recent afternoon at Brownsville Elementary School in Crozet, kids clambered around the playground during an after-school program. They're a small portion of the more than 13,000 students enrolled in Albemarle County Public Schools, which, despite being one of the largest school districts in the region, also has one of the lowest rates of COVID per capita. As of Wednesday, they've had 115 cases since the beginning of the school year, which breaks down to about 7 cases per 1,000 students and staff.
We are very fortunate to live in a community with a very high vaccination rate. And I think we're seeing the impact on that in our schools, both in our adults and our student populations.
Rosalind Schmidt is the division's chief operating officer. According to data from the Virginia Department of Health, 75% of adults in Albemarle County are fully vaccinated, 6 points higher than the statewide rate.
We have a very tight mitigation strategy and plan that puts in as much guidance as we can practically do, including masking, distancing, hand washing. We benefit from key partners in our community, including the Blue Ridge Health District, who have been an integral part to all of our preparation going into the school year. But also we have a group of local pediatricians and other doctors who have volunteered their time and expertise to support every little detail in the preparation for school.
The Albemarle County Public School Board also decided last week that all school employees must either be vaccinated or show a negative COVID test every week. 84.8% of their staff is fully vaccinated. Ryan McKay, Director of Policy and Planning for the Blue Ridge Health District, agreed that trends in the larger community are playing out within the schools.
I think that what helps Albemarle County and in some ways Charlottesville City is the vaccination rate among adults and the 12 to 17-year-old populations. The county has one of the highest vaccination rates in the state.
The opposite is happening in neighboring Augusta County, where just 57.5% of adults are fully vaccinated. Since the beginning of the school year, officials have reported 597 cases among students and staff. Augusta County school officials did not respond to WMRA's request for an interview. Situated in Augusta County, Waynesboro City also has quite a few cases for the size of their district, 128 since the beginning of the school year, which comes out to about 37 per 1,000 students and staff. It should be noted, though, that school started on August 10th in Waynesboro and Augusta, 2 weeks before Albemarle, so they are reporting over a longer period of time.
We are experiencing some cases of COVID, but when we do contact tracing, we're finding that those are caused by outside contact and outside influence, not contacts within the buildings.
Superintendent Jeffrey Castle said Waynesboro schools have been following all the mitigation guidance from the Department of Health and CDC. More than 90% of their employees are vaccinated.
Our community transmission is substantially higher than it is in our school buildings. And so one of the things I would say is we think our students are safer in school than out of school because parents have to work. And so then students end up in child care or doubled up in households with other families, or there's additional people at home in the household. Our older students often don't stay at home. They may go to the park or out to socialize, and so they're mingling outside of the building.
Dr. Laura Cornegate, director of the Central Shenandoah Health District, confirmed that rising COVID cases within local schools are
really just a reflection of the very high community transmission that we're seeing. In general, we have a really good relationship with all of the schools. The superintendents and staff have worked really hard to enact all of those mitigation strategies.
She noted that, to her knowledge, Highland County schools do not have a universal masking policy in place. The school board has delayed their opening until October 1st. Both Castle in Waynesboro and Schmidt in Albemarle County said that quarantining positive students and their close contacts has been an important part of preventing transmission in the classroom, but it does create difficulties for parents.
Generally, once we're able to explain things, parents understand, not all agree with it, certainly. It's extremely inconvenient, and we understand that. The pandemic is inconvenient in many ways to people, and we feel like that's the standard that the Department of Health and CDC recommends, and it keeps all of our faculty and staff and students safest.
Castle said they want students in classrooms, but also want to make sure they aren't spreading the virus while there. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
Learn more about that story with links to the data at WMRA.org or the WMRA app. A Culpeper County couple is suing an electric company for trying to install internet cable lines along their property without their consent. Whitney Evans with VPM reports.
The couple, John and Cynthia Grano, say the state's eagerness to expand broadband access is at odds with their property rights, the Virginia Mercury reports. They're suing Rappahannock Electric Cooperative, which had plans for a $600 million residential broadband project. As of 2020, Virginia law allows utilities to string fiber optic cables along existing poles and lines throughout the state without consulting property owners. Previously, utility companies had to offer compensation. But lawmakers, in a push to get high-speed access to all of Virginia by 2024, allowed utilities to sidestep that process. The cooperative has said the lawsuit caused them to drop plans for the project.
Whitney Evans reporting. The Augusta County Sheriff's Office said Monday that two people have been arrested in Pennsylvania in connection to a missing child case. Randy has the details.
NBC 29 reported that Khaleesi Hope Cuthriel, a three-year-old girl with blonde hair and blue eyes, was reported missing last week, but the Sheriff's Office has not been able to confirm her whereabouts after January. Last October, her mother had placed her in the care of a woman named Candy Royer. In February, Royer told family members that the girl was with her aunt or grandmother. But when Royer went missing earlier this month and sheriff's deputies began looking for her and Khaleesi, they found that the child had not been with the aunt or grandmother. Royer was found and arrested with a man named Travis Brown, who was already wanted in five local jurisdictions for several charges, including violent felonies. Anyone with information about Khaleesi is asked to contact Investigator Reed with the Augusta County Sheriff's Office at 540-245-5333. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
Long-awaited new political maps are going to be up for review on Monday. This week, the Redistricting Commission gave instructions to map drawers. Members of the commission agreed on some things, but vehemently disagreed on others. Virginia Public Radio's Jad Khalil reports.
Map drawing is technical, labor-intensive, and requires some expertise. That's why the Redistricting Commission decided to give instructions to map drawers rather than do it themselves. One directive was to keep counties and cities intact as much as they could, but on a race-related issue, deadlock prevailed.
It seems like we've decided that the question of giving map drawers specific instructions as to complying with the Voting Rights Act, we feel like we're at a hopeless impasse.
That was Democratic delegate Marcus Simon. The impasse was over different instructions from lawyers hired to advise the commission. Democrat lawyers said if map drawers see possible districts that could preserve the voting power of minorities, they should draw them that way. Republican lawyers said those instructions could be unconstitutional if they rely too much on race. Previous Republican-drawn maps in Virginia have been thrown out for racial bias. Minority groups traditionally vote more heavily for Democrats in Virginia. Ultimately, the commission deadlocked on the proposed instructions. A commission staffer summed up how that tie broke down.
Party lines, so it fails 8-8.
A tie means no action was taken, and each set of lawyers will give each set of map drawers their own advice on the law. That probably means very different maps on Monday. I'm Jad Khalil.
Tonight, two gubernatorial candidates will square off in the first of two debates this election season. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
Candidates for governor used to do four televised debates. In recent election cycles, they've done three. This year, the candidates could agree on only two debates, which means the stakes are super high for the first debate in Grundy this week. Stephen Farnsworth at the University of Mary Washington says this is the time for candidates to communicate directly to voters.
Sometimes people who are newer to campaigns struggle in establishing themselves as effective debaters. Their command of policy, their ability to respond quickly. It's not like being an effective debater makes you an effective governor, but you may never get the chance if you're not good at this.
This is former Governor Terry McAuliffe's third campaign for governor, so he's got lots of experience at this. Republican candidate Glenn Youngkin, on the other hand, has never run for office before. Quentin Kidd at Christopher Newport University says that means the focus will be on Youngkin.
He has been slow to put out policy proposals. The policy proposals he's put out have been thin. And so he's got to prove himself. He's got to prove to voters that he has the ability to be the governor. And so I think he's got much more to lose.
So far, Youngkin has avoided answering questions about many policy positions, like whether he supports the assault weapons ban or whether he supports requiring an ultrasound before a woman can get an abortion. This debate might be an opportunity for Youngkin to share more about what he would do if elected governor. I'm Michael Pope.
And finally today, one candidate on the ballot won't be present at tonight's debate. Patrick Larson with VPM spoke with Princess Blanding of the newly formed Liberation Party.
I asked Blanding what it means that her campaign won't be represented at the debate. She said she's focused on the work.
If I spend my energy dwelling on them excluding me, then I am not putting the energy that is needed in ensuring that we reach all Virginians to let them know about our campaign.
Blanding said it was a struggle to even get on the ballot. Without funds to access voter rolls, she turned to door knocking. She says most people signed her petition after hearing her story. Her brother, Marcus David Peters, was killed by Richmond police in 2018 while experiencing a mental health crisis. Blanding says people also respond to her message, which prioritizes racial and economic justice.
Patrick Larson reporting. Tonight's event will be broadcast on several networks and will be live streamed on the law school's YouTube channel. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Thursday.